Hello from London. Welcome to the Gab and Jules show. I'm Jules. This is not Gab, though. This is Stuart Robson. Gab is taking a few days off.
Oh, I think he deserves for him. He's had such a hard season so far, isn't he?
That's true. We've got a packed show today. As always, Robbo, as you know, we've watched a lot of football, you and I. I'm sure a lot of the viewers and listeners as well. We will talk about Liverpool and the crisis. It's a new low, I think, that defeat at Leicester. We talk about Napoli-Juve. We've got plenty of quick hits with Barcelona and Real Madrid. Champions League is coming back this week with some very exciting first leg of the last 16.
Good fixtures, yeah.
Yeah, really good fixture. But we have to start at Leicester for that game between Leicester and Liverpool. Just to set the scene, 2 months ago, Liverpool were top of the Premier League.
Yep.
They were 5 points clear. Mm. They just destroyed Crystal Palace 7-0 at Palace, at Selhurst Park. And they looked like the boss was back despite all the problems at the in defence, all the injuries. It looked like they got their mojo back. Yeah. And then in the last 2 months, five defeats. This was a new low at Leicester, wasn't it? Collectively, individually, everything.
A new low in the last 20 minutes. Because there was periods in the first half where I thought they were back to not near their best, but they were causing problems. There were a couple of balls played over the top by Henderson, and Salah looked a threat running in behind. They were pressing the ball quite well. They didn't allow Leicester too much time on the ball, which is, that's the key for Liverpool. When Liverpool are playing at their best, it's their closing down, it's the tempo they play at, and that's what's been missing over the last few weeks. And in the first half, and even against in the first half against Man City, they started to close the ball down and play with a bit more energy. But the last 10, 15 minutes, defensive errors, the lack of organisation, the lack of game understanding by defenders, by the goalkeeper, by many of the players, was just poor.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great goal. The goal from Salah, Firmino with his little sort of 360 Zidane turn, and then the finish is great. You're 1-0 up, and you look in control. You're right, you look in control. And then... you conceded 3 goals in 8 minutes. They conceded 3 in 11 minutes against City the week before.
Yeah.
What happened in their head when they start not controlling the game anymore? How can they collapse like this?
I still think there's a lack of energy. I think they've not got that belief in their closing down now. Because when they go and close people down, for 2-3 years, they'd go and close it down, the ball down, they'd win it back, and then they'd counter-attack again or be on the front foot. Now when they're going to close down, they're not closing down as a group, so they get played around. So then the players think, do we close down? Do we just hold off a little bit? And they made poor decisions. You know, the first goal, obviously from a free kick, they don't defend that well.
Let's talk about the foul, though, because... Alexander-Arnold, as we've mentioned this week, the whole season, has struggled defensively, even offensively, but defensively especially. He's never been a great defender, but this season even less. And Barnes has the ball. And Alexander-Arnold is as far as I am from you to Barnes, almost letting Barnes, getting the momentum, arriving on that 1v1 and then taking him on. And he's just like, you think, okay.
Well, they're lucky it's just outside the box because...
Yeah, it could have easily been a penalty.
As soon as that ball goes to Barnes, Alexander-Arnold should be racing out there, slowing himself down as he gets there, jocking him to force him one way. But as soon as the player gets up momentum, it's easy for him to go past people. And Thiago is not the sort of a great defender, so when he gets back in, he makes a poor decision as well. They get too square with each other. It allows Barnes to go in between them. So that's poor defending. But I feel
they should defend the free kick better.
Much better. Yeah. I mean, you know, first of all, they let it go in there. The goalkeeper hasn't dealt with it particularly well. There's all the shout whether it was offside or not, but deal with the ball that comes into the box. And they didn't do that. Then I look at I'm going to go to the third goal before the second. The third goal, when Barnes gets on the half turn, there's no danger whatsoever. Thiago is in the right back spot. He jogs out of the situation and just leaves Barnes to run in there. Well, I looked where Alexander-Arnold, he's playing as a right wing back rather than a right back. So they're all over the place. And that's the problem I think that Jurgen Klopp has had this season. When they were defending well from the front, when they were defending well in midfield, they could play with just two centre-halves and the two full-backs could get high up the field because the opposition couldn't counter-attack them with any sort of pace because they were always having the ball pinched off them. Now they're not defending quite so well higher up the field. They need more protection for the two centre-halves. And you've got two full-backs that don't really want to defend. They want to go forward. So if you're going to do that, I thought... earlier on in the season, he might have to change the system and go to three at the back. So he's got extra cover for the two. Well, they're wing-backs.
Yeah, completely.
Robertson and Alexander are wing-backs. They're not defenders. And that's been a problem for him for ages.
Yeah, I mean, all the injuries at the back, the centre-backs, we know that. Ozan Kabak, who is a young player, but a very promising one, but still a young player, made his debut. didn't go well with that mistake with Alisson. What's happening with Alisson? But, like, Klopp said to us after the Man City game, maybe his feet were frozen, maybe they were cold, hence the two mistakes in those passes. This time, it's a misunderstanding, I'm sure. But Klopp also said, I should have heard someone shouting, you know, me or mine.
There's only one person at fault for it, because Kabak can't see what's happening. The ball's played over the top of him. He's looking
at
the ball.
He's in the right position.
He's in the right position. He's going to deal with it. Why Alisson wants to come out and try and deal with it, I don't know. It's a lack of judgment. And then when he does try and deal with it, he doesn't deal with it particularly well, and he makes himself look silly. But it's something I've got a real grudge against. Goalkeepers, goalkeepers coming out. You know, when I was coaching, the one thing they never worked on in training, because they always wanted the goalkeepers by themselves, is lots of shot stopping and coming and catching balls. But so often now, they make misjudgments when balls are played over the top, whether to come, to stay. I was doing that game, and Handanovic came out in the Inter game and did really well on one occasion. But he made a real mistake in the Coppa Italia a couple of weeks ago when he came out and Ronaldo scored. It happens with so many goalkeepers now. If in doubt, stay in your box.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, let's talk about Klopp as well, because he'd been a really tough few days for him, you know, privately with his mother. The loss against City, I think, really, really hurt him. And then this one as well. There's, even if he's tried to stay positive, and like you, like all of us, saying like there was still some good things that we did, same against City, but yet nothing goes their way. And you see the frustration in what he says after the games, before the games. The moaning, we spoke about it this season already. What do you think his mind is at? And considering you've got the Leipzig game in the Champions League coming on Tuesday night, then the derby against Everton on Saturday, where things could get even worse than what they are now.
Yeah, I don't know what's going through his mind at the moment, because, yeah, obviously he had that, the sadness of his family. But over the course of the season, he's made so many excuses. He's had a go at the press. He's had a go at the television companies. He's had a go at referees. He's had a go at everybody.
Yeah.
And all that does is tell everybody else in the league, this man's under pressure. And that is, I think that's transmitting to the players as well. Now they're looking at their manager thinking, well, I'm not sure he's in control anymore. I'm not sure that he's given us good advice. Before, in the first two or three seasons, Klopp was magnificent as a man manager. He used to come on the field and cuddle the players, even when they hadn't played particularly well, and he'd back them up. I just think he's not lost the plot, that's the wrong word, but he's just, his emotions have got the better of him, and I don't think he's handled it very well this season. And as they've lost games, he's got worse and worse. So he's, I think, making the players anxious. He's making himself anxious, and I don't think he's doing anything for the club at the moment.
As we said, there's two big games coming up against Leipzig in the Champions League on Tuesday, against Everton in the derby at Goodison Park on Saturday afternoon. The Leipzig game, I just wanted your opinion as a coach on how do you prepare for a game like this. This is a huge game, not only because Klopp plays against another German team, against Nagelsmann and all that, you know, all the narrative about is the teacher against the pupil and things like this, and there's a point where Nagelsmann would take over Klopp somewhere.
Yeah,
but it's also a game, imagine if Liverpool were to be knocked out right now by Leipzig in the last 16 of the Champions League for the second year running, after being beaten by Atletico Madrid last season in the last 16 as well. This would be even be a bigger disaster. How do you prepare for a game like this? What are the triggers, maybe mentally, for the players to try to get them get there together again?
I'm going to contradict myself, because I always say you need to stick with what your formula. You need to stick with what you know works best, but you just have to do it better. You know, you can't keep changing from one thing to the other. But on this occasion, I would think about changing. And we were talking about how Robertson plays high up the field one side, Alexander plays high up the field the other side. Well, when you're defending well from the front and in midfield, you can get away with that. But Liverpool aren't defending well from the front anymore. They aren't defending well in midfield. So the two centre-halves, two inexperienced centre-halves at times, players that, are, you know, whoever plays there, it's either a midfield player playing back there or it's a new player coming in that hasn't got that great of experience. You need extra cover. So when Alexander-Arnold, who's not a good defender anyway, starts rampaging forward, because you don't want to lose that part of his game, you don't want to lose Robertson as an attacking player, you've got to have that extra centre-half coming in. Or they play with a more solid midfield, and Milner, as he's done so often, when Alexander-Arnold goes forward, Milner drops into a right-back position. So they need more cover defensively on the counter-attack, because they're making bad decisions defensively. They, at the start of the season, they tried to hold that really high line, They were trying to copy Bayern Munich. Yeah. That didn't work because they got beaten 7 at Aston Villa when when people kept on running in behind them.
And Van Dijk was there.
And Van Dijk was playing in that game. So they tried to change the sort of way they were trying to defend from the back. I think they need to change it again and give themselves a little bit of extra cover, because if you're not an experienced centre-back or you're a midfield player playing back, it takes you half a second to make that extra decision. So if you've got an extra player back there, it might give you more security.
And even more when you will play against potentially a Leipzig team that will play with no number 9. I mean, they can play Sørloth or Poulsen, but they often play with small number 10s up front, whether that's
that keeps spinning down the spinning
Forsberg,
the sides,
Olmo. And I think if you're Henderson playing at the back where you've never played before, having to deal with a bit like against City, where they didn't really know if they had to come onto Foden or Sterling or whoever was playing centrally, or Bernardo Silva, or stay in their position, I think it's a nightmare for any defenders, but even more if you're not used to play there, to have to play against a false number 9.
Because if you're a midfield player or a fullback playing at centre-half, whoever's playing there, you've got all the attributes. You can probably head it, you can run, and you can pass out from the back, and you can probably tackle in 1v1 situations. The thing that makes the difference is your decision-making. Do I go in with the player that drops off? Yeah. Do I defend the space? And you might take, again, half a second longer to make that decision. In top-class football, that half a second means that somebody's running through behind you and scoring a goal. So that's the problem they've got to get. So I think they have to go with an extra defender.
Would you keep Kabak in the team? I mean, I've seen him play loads with Schalke and even before that, Stuttgart. He's really good. I think I've got no issue whatsoever on the talent that he has and the potential that he has going forward. And he's only 20 and I think he's going to be a good defender. However, this was a really, really... I was going to say traumatizing. It was a tough first game for him at Leicester. This is, again, going back, not technically to Germany because he's in Budapest, but going to play against a German team you know well because you've been there with Schalke. You haven't always been great against Leipzig in the game that he played there. If you're a club, do you keep him? Do you play him? Or if Fabinho can come back, would you play Henderson and Fabinho? Or do you need one of those two in the field?
Well, I'm saying they should play with three centre-halves. So you have to play with him, because that would be my... And I think if you're going to go and buy a centre-half, albeit a young centre-half, you've got to play him. Because I think he's good enough, as you've said. He's had rave reviews for his time in the Bundesliga. I don't think he played particularly poorly at the weekend.
He did
okay.
And like you said, it's not his fault, really, on the Vardegaard.
No, so I would stick with him. I'd give him another game and continue with him maybe until the two centre-halves are fit.
Yeah.
And just see how he goes. Give him that experience. You know, I know it's important games, but it's an important game if you're playing somebody else there and he's not an experienced centre-half. So it's a gamble, but it's one I would take.
There's a few issues at Liverpool and the injuries haven't helped. Diogo Jota not being there when he'd been so good for them pretty much since day one. Not being in the rotation to be able to rest a Salah or a Firmino or a Mane. Mane's form has been dreadful.
Yeah.
We talked about Salah, although he scored a lovely goal against Leicester and two great against West Ham. But before that and in between, apart from the penalty at City, he struggles as well. Firmino, we know. There's Thiago Alcantara as well, which, listen, I'm the biggest fan. I do think, though, that he's one of those players who excels when your team is playing good. As soon as your team struggles a bit, because, as you said, one is not, doesn't have that sort of defensive mindset. He's not... I don't think the one that you can rely on in terms of let's go in and get stuck in to make sure that you don't get overrun in midfield or things like this. He's very good when he's got the ball and when there's a lot of option in front of him and there's a lot of movement. If there isn't that takes a lot of his game away, right?
Yeah.
And he's been very poor.
Well, there's two problems he's got. If he's playing as the central midfield player, the holding midfield player, the way Liverpool play, at times, if you talk about their fullbacks going forward and their midfield players will make forward runs, he's going to be isolated and he's going to have to get behind, in between his centre-halves at times to get on the ball, but also defend.
Yeah.
And we know he's not particularly good defensively. If everybody's pressing well higher up the field, that defensive sort of, or lack of defensive qualities doesn't come into play.
Yeah.
But against Leicester, there were times when he was playing on the right-hand side of a midfield three. And remember, Salah doesn't come back and Mane doesn't come back on the other side. So when they were switching the play, Leicester, from one side of the field to the other, who was the player that had to go and defend first out in the wide area? It was Thiago.
Yeah.
And that's not what he wanted to do, because he can't actually do it. He's not particularly quick. He's a great technical footballer, good passer of the ball, but he hasn't got that athleticism in a 1v1 situation to go and defend properly. And that's a problem for Liverpool when he plays in those positions.
Let's give a bit of love to Leicester as well, because although when Salah scored, it looked like Liverpool had the game under control, as we said, and then they showed character to come back in the game, even if they were a bit lucky at times. They're third. They're very strong in that race for top four. They look like right now more likely even to finish in that top four than Liverpool, potentially, I guess, because if we're recording this on Monday morning, if Chelsea beat Newcastle on Monday night, they will overtake Liverpool and go in the top four, and Liverpool will be out of the top four. So a lot of love for what Rodgers is doing, of course.
And the other thing that all the players and anybody that watched the game live would say, he changed the system.
Yeah.
He went to a diamond after Liverpool, or I think just after Liverpool scored, and it changed the game. Mm. And that's what the players all gave him credit. So when a manager makes changes and they work, the players believe in him.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the manager knows exactly what he's doing. We trust everything he does. When managers start making decisions, they don't come off players. We won't listen to him. You know, he's all right, but you know, we're not got the best manager. They trust Brendan Rodgers. The players love him. I think he has got a great relationship with the players. Yeah, they play some good football. They've got a good midfield. Tielemans has been excellent. It's fantastic. Yeah. And I think they're a very good side. Every chance of being in that top four.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right, Robo, let's talk about Napoli-Juve, which was the big game. Well, one of the big games in Italy this weekend. Napoli with Gattuso under pressure. They hadn't been playing well. They had dropped points in games where they should not have. And on the other hand, Juve and Pirlo playing much better, qualifying for the Coppa d'Italia final.
Yeah.
Seems to find a bit of a hybrid identity now. Instead of always trying to play with the ball, they came a bit more like the Allegri of all, like the Juve of Allegri before, where they're solid defensively as well and maybe a bit more efficient. Mm. And yet in that game, they had a lot of the ball, they had a lot of chances, and they ended up losing 1-0 to a penalty.
Well, they were comfortable for the first 20-25 minutes. They looked comfortable. I couldn't see. Napoli looked like a nervous team, didn't know how to get the ball from back to front. When they did try and go longer, the two centre-halves for Juventus won it back. Juventus were pressing high up the field, so when Napoli tried to play out from back, they won it in good areas. And I couldn't see any other result after that first 20 minutes than Juventus winning. And then suddenly, Chiellini, it's a silly use of the arm. I don't think he's trying to hurt the player, but once his arm goes above his shoulder, it gives the referee a chance to give the penalty, and he's given the penalty, and Insigne finished it really well. And then, as I've seen Juventus do, when they start to try and catch up in games, they lose their shape a little bit. They lose their discipline. Then the front players don't link up with each other. Ronaldo starts going here, there and everywhere. Then they start making changes. He didn't make so many in this game, Pirlo.
No.
Because the changes he made were almost like for like. In other games, he's made three substitutions and they have to change about six positions to get back in the game. So he didn't do that. So really, it was their finishing at the end of it and that lack of quality in the final third, which you don't really expect when you've got Morata and you've got Chiesa and you've got Ronaldo. So you'd expect them to get back into the game, but the goalkeeper played well.
Merritt had a really good game. I mean, for Gattuso, it's a huge win. There's no doubt. He might still not finish the season,
no,
but certainly winning that game, coming back into the top four for them. They have a game in hand, let's not forget, to play against Juventus, by the way, later on in the season. But that was huge. I agree with you, there's still a lot to sort out. I thought Osimhen, who had been so good in the first half of the season, looked a bit lost and isolated. And there's still a lot of work to do for that team.
Because he was quite brave, Gattuso. Yeah, with his lineup, he played Lozano out on the left-hand side. Politano played on the right-hand side. Insigne was playing behind Osimhen. Yeah. So I assumed from the start of the game they were going to dominate possession. They would be on the front foot. But that wasn't to be the case. I mean, Insigne struggled to get into the game. Lozano, I think, is better on the right-hand side than he is on the left-hand side. Politano, I like Politano as a player when he comes in on his left foot from the right-hand side. But they just couldn't dominate midfield. Bakayoko, I think, has done quite well since he's been at Napoli, but he couldn't really dominate the game. He's outnumbered in that area. But it was Juventus that really were the team that should have gone on to dominate and got the equaliser and maybe gone on and win. But they just didn't have enough about them in that top third of the field.
It means that Juve are 8 points behind Inter, who are now the new leaders, who won, with the game in hand, so potentially five that game against Napoli. This is a big opportunity missed, though, because as you play that game again, they could have won that game, and then they would have made that gap much closer with Inter and Milan, who face each other on Sunday in the Milan derby, which is another opportunity for Juve to come back a bit. Is this where you win or lose trophies?
Before the game, I thought Juventus would have a great run and they'd go and win Serie A again, because I'm still not convinced about AC Milan. And even though Inter played well at the weekend, I'm still not convinced they're going to win most of their games from now to the end of the season. So I thought Juventus would win this game and just go on and on and on. Now, there's probably a little bit of lack of confidence. There'll be a doubt in Pirlo's mind. There'll be a doubt in the players' minds. They've got to win their next three or four games.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as much as the I think the way they've played has improved and the PLO, this race for not just for the title, but even for the top four, top six, with Atalanta winning again this weekend, Roma winning with Jordan Veretout playing so well, Lazio who had
so
won six
threw
in a row.
A Frenchman in there, didn't
of
you?
Of course, I had to, you know. Lazio who'd won six in a row before that defeat against Inter on Sunday night. You just can't lose points where you...
Well, it's
great,
because at one point I thought there was only three teams in it. Milan, Inter and Juventus. After this weekend, Roma come flying back into it. Atalanta win their game. And unfortunately, Lazio didn't. And Napoli, of course, get themselves back into the race.
Yeah. Well, Robbo, let's look a little bit more into this this Napoli-Juve game, and especially Juve, because watching the game, I think that Morata and Cristiano Ronaldo could be such a good partnership. For me, when I look at it, I see so many aspects of each other's game that can complement each other well. I see two very intelligent players. Morata maybe could get a bit tougher in the way he plays, but certainly I look, okay, those two, this could work.
Absolutely. And I'm
left a bit like, oh, come on.
I'd love to know how many times they actually pass to each other in a game.
Yeah.
For two seasons, Martinez and Lukaku, when the ball comes into one, they're always looking for the other. And it's almost as if Antonio Conte, you've got to pass to each other before we start any move. I think it's almost the opposite with Morata and Ronaldo. They never sort of seem to be working as a pair. When the ball comes into Morata, he's looking to get turned, but he'll play it wide rather than play it into to Ronaldo. When the ball's coming into him, he's thinking, how can I get turned and get shots away? Which, understandable, because he's a goal scorer. But I think they could help each other by playing closer together, linking up with each other more, playing little 1-2s. Morata's good in the air, and so is Ronaldo. They're flicking balls on for each other. I think they should combine more. And that's a problem that I see. When they're struggling in games, rather than getting closer together, Ronaldo says, where can I go and get the ball and have more joy? And he'll go into a wide area, leaving Morata up front by himself. And then Chiesa is thinking, well, now you're taking up my space. I've got to go somewhere where I don't really want to go. So that's the area where I think Juventus could still improve. When you're talking about, you know, Ronaldo scoring all the goals he's scored, you know, and then you're saying, well, he's a bit of the problem because he's not linking up with Morata, people will have a go at you. But I think he's such a great player, and Morata could be such a top-class player. If the two would link up with each other, Juventus would be another 10% better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we saw Chiesa being quite, again, really good in that game. There's a lot of options for Pirlo there, Kulusevski, Bernardeschi, even if he wants to put another wide player.
Which was a surprise that Bernardeschi played in the game, because Weston McKennie has been the player that's played on the right-hand side, making different sort of play. He's been making runs in between the fullback and the centre-half of the opposition, and he's allowed Cuadrado to come down the other side. But they had to make that change because Cuadrado went off at half-times, so it changed the sides where the attacking fullback was going to be. It ended up, I think, Danilo went to right-back and Alessandro was the player that wanted to get forward down the left-hand side. So then it meant everything had to change a little bit.
But do you think that the Ronaldo-Morata partnership, because players around them change so much. So sometimes you've got Chiesa, sometimes you've got Kulusevski, sometimes you've got Dybala, sometimes you've got Ramsey playing as either as a 10 centrally or as a sort of like playmaker white. Bernardeschi, as we mentioned, it could be a three at the back and five. Do you think maybe that doesn't help compared to if we always had, let's say, Chiesa and Kulusevski and Morata and Ronaldo and those four playing with each other regularly, week in and week out? Would that help Ronaldo?
I'm sure it would help because I think if you play the same lineup all the time and you get a game understanding, and I think he wants to do that, Pirlo, in terms of the formation. You know, I can pick the formation as soon as I see the players' names on the sheet. I know exactly what they're going to do, and they're playing. It's almost like a 3.5 man defence. So Juventus always put it out as a back four. If you go on their Twitter feed, it's four, and they always put their midfield players the opposite way around to which they're actually going to be in the game. I don't know why they do. But they want, when the attacking fullback or the almost like a wing back, if it's Cuadrado, they play their right sided midfield player infield, which has been Weston McKennie. If it's on the other side, they bring Chiesa back over to here. Alexandro's the player that attacks, and Weston McKennie or Aaron Ramsey comes in. So you know exactly what the formation is. But it's always difficult with Ronaldo because Ronaldo is not going to be told where he's going to play.
Yeah.
So Ronaldo goes where he thinks he can cause most problems. And then other players have to adjust around him. You know, that's how it is at Juventus. Course, that's how it's always going to be with Cristiano Ronaldo. That's how it's always going to be with Lionel Messi. When you've scored as many goals as they have and you're the two world's best players, if things aren't happening for you, you go and do something else that you think it might happen. But it doesn't always help the other players.
They play Porto on Wednesday in the Champions League. Porto side. Great story about Porto quickly. Sergio Conceição, the manager, has four children, I think four boys. One of them, the youngest one, who was one when Conceição won the title with Porto all those years ago as a player, made his debut for Porto's first team with his dad as a manager at the weekend against Boavista. They drew 2-2. There's no, not that you've seen a lot of Porto this season, but Juve still are way above those kind of teams, right?
Yes.
If they're serious and Pirlo doesn't make things up and Cristiano scores the chances, which, by the way, didn't do so much against Napoli. He could have won that game.
Yeah, he could have won for them. He had a couple of really good chances.
Really good chances.
I'll go back to the Barcelona game away from home.
Yeah.
That was Juventus at their very best.
Yeah.
Pressing the ball high up the field. Midfield player, it was Weston McKennie on that occasion, making forward runs. The front two looking a real threat. The defenders defending as well as they possibly could. You know, every time the ball was played forward, they made interceptions. Chiellini, De Ligt, Bonucci, whoever it is.
Yeah.
They're good defenders. They're good 1v1 defenders. They're still an excellent defensive side. So I think they'll have no problems against Porto.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Rob Robo, let's go for our usual quick hits.
Let's go, Jules.
Manchester United have now won only two of the last eight games in the league. Ole Art was trending on Twitter and Harry Maguire said it was a foul on Lindelof on the goal for West Bromwich Albion. Do you buy it, Robo?
Well, let's talk about the cross into the box. And I'm going to let you pronounce his name because it's a French-sounding name, the centre-forward who scored the goal.
Yeah, Jan?
Against Lindelof. I could see it both ways. Lindelof's got to be tougher, but I could say that he did put his arm across his body. He did put his arm across his face. So most referees, I think, would have given a foul, but the referee didn't. VAR thought it was OK as well. So the centre-half's got to be a lot tougher. As for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I still doubt his credentials as a top-quality coach, but you have to say he's got the team playing slightly better than they were earlier on in the season.
Yeah.
They're not a team that they look as though they're going to get into the top four, which was probably their aim at the start of the season. But I still think they could have a better coach in at Manchester United. And if he loses from now to the end of the season more games than he wins, I'm sure he'll be able to have a job. But they need a better coach, I think.
Well, yeah, I agree with you.
Jules, Manchester City extended their winning run to 16. They destroyed Spurs. You thought it was the perfect performance, didn't you?
I was there and I have to say, I know Spurs were tired after playing 120 minutes against Everton in midweek in the Cup. I know that. And in the first half, they sort of coped okay. But City was so good. Joao Cancelo was incredible in those almost three or four different positions that he plays on the pitch. I thought Gundogan, of course, was magnificent. And they just were too good for Spurs, really too good. And I saw Hugo Lloris after the game, who was like, you know, we're not doing great. We have to find the answers of our problem.
Do you only speak to the French players?
Not always, but often, when we see each other. But I just thought, as good as City were, and 16 wins in a row, unbeaten in 23 now, since the defeat against Spurs, and it was as good and as strong as I think some roaring signs are for Spurs in the current form. Fulham had lost 22 Robbo League games in a row at Goodison Park until Sunday. They totally deserved to win as well against Everton, didn't they?
I thought you were going to say, you remember the last time that they won in 1953.
You were not even born.
I wasn't even born, let me just tell you, at the time.
1953.
Yeah, they fully deserved it. They were outstanding. As poor as Everton were, Everton didn't have anything about them in terms of their closing down. But the movement of Fulham, the possession of Fulham, the forward runs of the Fulham players, I thought they were absolutely outstanding. They deserved to win the game, and they deserved to win it by probably a lot more.
Because you're right.
The level of performance, which Scott Parker has said they've been putting in those performances but not winning games or not scoring goals or not finishing off the moves they've had. I thought it was outstanding from them. And maybe they just go on a run now.
They're 8 points behind or 7 points behind Newcastle.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult, but you never know.
If you've got the momentum, you can.
The confidence after that.
Yeah.
Now, thanks to a great Karim Benzema goal, Real Madrid beat Valencia easily, but they lose Dani Carvajal again, and Zidane was not happy, Jules.
He was not happy, Robbo, because of the injury. He said, I don't know why my players keep being injured. And it's true, if you look at the list of injuries through the whole season, muscular injuries, you know, hamstring, thigh, calves, all of this, it's been pretty bad. And maybe he can explain as well why at times they haven't been playing so well, but they were very dominant against Valencia.
So did he blame anybody for them, or was
he just
in general saying he wasn't happy?
Yeah, he wasn't happy. I think maybe they're going to look into it. Even the quality of the pitches at the training ground. But it was a really good win. I mean, Valencia, they were terrible. They were really terrible. Real Madrid looked almost back to their best at times, especially in the first half. Benzema, Toni Kroos was fantastic.
Great second goal from Kroos,
wasn't it? Fantastic second goal. And it's a good win, because I think they need that momentum going into the Champions League that when they're going to come back in it. And after all some of the difficulty that they had...
Who plays it right back, though?
That's the thing. So you could put Ferland Mendy at right back, but Marcelo is also injured on the left-hand side. You could put Lucas Vasquez, I guess, is the more...
Who has played... He's played for
natural,
Spain at right back.
Yeah, natural but unnatural replacement in that position. Arsenal beat Leeds 4-2 thanks to... Aubameyang hat-trick, his first one ever in the Premier League, which I was surprised to learn, Robbo. Marcelo Bielsa said that Mikel Arteta prepared the game better than him. Do you agree?
He played better. Arsenal played better, and their system and their formation and the way they pressed the ball really worked. And Leeds didn't look as though they were ready for it. They had Phillips missing from their midfield, which makes a big difference because he's the one that they link everything through. But I thought Arsenal were excellent. And no surprise, it's the young players again. I know Aubameyang scored the goals, but Saka was magnificent.
Fantastic.
You know, and the pitch seemed to be so open, so there was lots of room for him to run. And when Arsenal play well, they do things at pace.
Yeah.
And against Leeds, they did things at pace. Emil Rowe-Smith, likewise, he was running with the ball at pace, playing little balls around the corner. Aubameyang was making runs in behind. Mm-hmm. Saka was coming in off the touchline, off that right-hand side, making things happen. The fullbacks were getting forward. I thought it was a great performance from us. And Odegaard played well as well, playing in that number 10.
His debut as a first start. Yeah. It was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
Now, Jules, the Atletico struggled at Granada, but still managed to get a win after dropping points against Celta Vigo.
It's a big win, Robbo, because Granada is a tough place to go. They didn't play well, I thought, but they got the points. You know, Correa scores late after they were paid back 1-1 from Granada.
So when you say it's a difficult place, is it a bit like Stoke City on a Tuesday
night?
Although
it was really sunny Saturday, and it looked quite warm. They were all short sleeve. I was like, wow, I was freezing myself in Manchester, but they were good. But it's finding those ways.
Yeah.
And I do think they're going to win the league, and they've got a game in hand, and they still were above Barcelona and Real Madrid. It's just the way they find those goals, even when they don't play well. He's got a few options. Cholo Simeone, of course, he uses them well. We saw Marcos Llorente once Kondogbia was taken off, playing a bit more higher up on the pitch, where he makes a big difference and he scored the first goal. And I just thought, again, you look at them, although they draw a point against Celta, I'm not sure much can happen to them this season, really.
And I suppose it's in a way, it's good to see a manager keep going. Even when they have a season where you think, maybe this is the time for him to go.
Yeah.
They keep with him, and now it looks like they could win the league.
You're right. Leo Messi scored a fantastic goal against Alaves to show that he and Barcelona are certainly ready for the clash with PSG, Robbo.
It was a good performance. Good performance from him. A couple of great goals as well throughout the... I mean, they win the game. They score five goals. They looked dominant. They looked as though they were back, not to their best, but he made one or two changes. I'm not sure it's going to be the same sort of team that plays in midweek. But on the day, Messi looked to be firing all cylinders. It's going to be a good game in midweek.
Yeah, it'll be.
PSG, on the other hand, are not playing well, even if they did beat Nice at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy they won, Robbo, but they were so poor. And I'm so worried about this game against Barcelona. I don't even want to talk about it.
Why were they so poor?
Just no movement, no creativity. Mbappe trying to do things on his own, but he's not as good even as he used to be in one-on-one. I would rather forget about this Nice game and just hope for the best for the game against Barcelona. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's a good enough answer,
Bayern Munich won the Club World Cup on Thursday against Tigres. And this weekend, they also announced the arrival of Dayot Upamecano, the French centre-back, highly rated French. Pretty good week for them, Robbo.
Well, as he's French, he's got to be good, hasn't
he? Of course.
I think he's an excellent player. I think he's good on the ball. He's a good defender. I think he'd probably have to learn to play the Bayern way and holding that high line. But in terms
of... He makes a few mistakes, as we saw before.
All round, I think he's going to be an excellent signing. And just when I thought Bayern were just slipping away from their very best... to win the World Cup or the Club World Cup, I thought it was excellent. They played well in all the games. So, yes, this is a good Bayern Munich side again.
Yeah.
And Dortmund face Sevilla on Wednesday. Their home form, or their form, could not be more different, could it, Jules?
You're right. Sevilla won again with a lot of rotations from Julen Lopetegui, and Nezeri didn't start, for example. Fernando didn't start. I mean, Jules Koundé.
How many is that on the trot?
Jules Koundé was on the bench as well. They've won
five or
six on the trot now. They look good. I mean, it was Huesca and it was only 1-0 win, but they knew what they had to do. They did it really good. They're on a run, as you said, great momentum. For Dortmund, it's the other way around. What's going on? I mean, they drew. Erling Haaland scored a goal where maybe they should have put the ball outside because one of the Hoffenheim players was on the pitch.
He was play acting.
But still, even that, they were so poor defensively again. It was just mental. And I'm just, I don't know what's going on. I don't think Edin Terzic is the right guy.
No.
But he's still very worrying. As we mentioned earlier, Robbo, we've got a new leader in Serie A, Inter, who beat Lazio 3-1 on Sunday. Would you rather talk about the controversy of the first goal or the superb performance from Romelu Lukaku, or both even, if you
A little bit of both. I know we disagree. I thought the penalty shouldn't have been given. I thought it was he got enough of the ball and he didn't get the player until after the ball was touched. You would disagree, but I think that's excellent. 50-50, I think, would be most people that would watch it. Romelu Lukaku, so important for Inter. They were playing on the counter-attack, and if the ball went into him and he was able to hold on to it, once he gets turned, his pace and power to run away from people. Yes, it was difficult for a couple of the Lazio players to be playing against him because they weren't used to be playing in that sort of position. Yeah. Parolo is a midfield player. Yeah. He came on in the second half. Hoot got himself booked, so he was always under pressure. That's why he was taken off at half-time. And Acerbi, the player that could have probably been up against him and managed him, was playing higher up the field, almost like a left wing-back at times. So I would say it was a good performance from Lukaku. He scored his two goals. And the best bit was the setting up of Lautaro Martinez.
Great goal.
Inter are top, as you said, but only really because AC Milan played so poorly against Spezia.
Incredible. And Spezia, I think, and the manager Italiano deserved a lot of credit for the way they've been playing for the last few weeks, not just against Milan, but Milan were dreadful. They were all dreadful. Not one of them play at this level, and they deserve to lose. And when you think that you knew that Inter were playing Lazio, that potentially they could drop points, that you were playing against Spezia, then the following weekend, on Sunday, there's the Milan derby, Inter against AC Milan. You knew this was a game
and it was with all their players back, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. This is not when you wanted to drop points. And now, I'm not sure how they're going to prepare for the game of the weekend, especially with the Europa League on Thursday. We'll have to see. Well, that's all we have time for today. Robbo, thank you so much for coming.
Always a pleasure.
Instead of Gab. We will see you on Thursday. Gab will be back. We've got loads to talk about on Thursday. The Champions League, previewing the Europa League, Manchester City play against Everton in midweek as well in the Premier League. So lots to talk about on Thursday's show. I hope you enjoyed today and join us on Thursday.